Welcome to Just Mets Live, everybody. We are here on Wednesday, July 30th at 9 p.m. The trade deadline, less than 24 hours away. We have a huge day of trades to talk about and a lot to preview as well. We'll also be taking all of your calls, everything that you've got for us for the trade deadline. Mike, before we get into it, how are you doing?
Well, it would have been nice if they had actually shown a pulse in the series, but they were less than good, as I like to say. I like to be nice. They were less than good this week. I mean,
less than good.
Very diplomatic. It was a bunch of things. And I know, like, we keep talking about the offense, but I think, you know, you and I talked about it a little while ago after the loss. And he said, like, today was everything that was on display today is everything they need, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they need a starting pitching situation. Now, everyone tells me, oh, they have five starters. Well, they really don't, you know, because Clay Holmes, I think, is just way over his threshold of, and you know, his career high was 66 innings before. Like, we're well beyond that, and I think we're starting to see it. So I think they need another starting pitcher. They're not getting length or depth or length out of pretty much anybody. They're still ramping up Frankie Montas, who was, you know, has been up and down, and Sean Manaea, who was very good last night, but still ramping up. Like, yep. I mean, I don't want to hear they have five starters. And I know they loaded up the bullpen this week, and they already had a pretty good bullpen at that. But it doesn't matter who they get if they're not going to get any length out of their starting pitchers, because they're all going to stink, you know, at some point when they get overused and ultimately misused. I'm serious. Like, I mean, like, it doesn't matter who you have if you're not getting – if the formula isn't being applied, and that being – you know, get it, like, they have to get more than like four or five innings from the starters. Otherwise, you're just going to overwork everybody, and everybody's going to be tired, and then they're going to lose. And that's pretty much what you see all the time. And you saw it with Buto, who's now gone. Like, you saw it last night. You just gave up a crooked number and they lost, you know. So, and that's a function of just being like misused, right? He's misused in that situation. Because other people aren't available because they've been overused. And it's like you got to get more length out of the starters. And I think that comes with getting another starting pitcher. I think that helps. But, like, I mean, on the other hand, you know, obviously, like, it's difficult to complain about the moves they made for this bullpen. I mean, they have a championship-grade bullpen on paper now. And that's how you win games in October. You know, you win in the bullpen. But they have to get there first, and they're not going to get there scoring less than four runs per game, you know, over the next 2 months. So they need to find offense.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot to unpack. We'll get to all of it in this show. Again, if you want to ask us a question or just make a comment, suggest a trade, there's a feature in the Twitter Spaces where you can request to speak. We're going to talk through a few things first, but make your request, and we'll definitely get to everybody before we hop off tonight. But first things first, we got to talk about that bullpen. Huge day for the bullpen as the David Stearns remodeling, so to speak, of that bullpen is complete. Last Friday, they made the first move of acquiring Gregory Soto, which was a solid move from the left-hand side. But today, the real big work was done. We're going to first react to the first trade that happened this afternoon, and that is the Tyler Rogers trade. The Mets acquire the right-handed submarining relief pitcher from the Giants, sub-2 ERA, pretty good WAR for a relief pitcher, very, very effective for the Giants for many years. Doesn't throw very hard, but really does befuddle opposing hitters with his delivery, with his release point, and it's just like a different look out of the bullpen when you have a bunch of guys throwing really hard. I love throwing a guy in the mix who just like completely looks different and throws the ball different than everybody else. That makes it a lot harder for hitters. The Mets do give up what some people believe was a sizable trade package. I think we should unpack that a little bit as well, because my initial reaction was like, wow, I'm surprised that's what it took. But the more I thought about it, the more I'm more okay with it. They trade Blade Tidwell, who is their number 10 prospect, Drew Gilbert, their 12th ranked prospect, and then Jose Buto, I think, was maybe the most surprising name of the three, just because he's on the major league roster. What was your initial reaction to the move, both what they're getting and what they gave up?
Well, as far as what they're getting, you know, I think he really complements Gregory Soto well, because Soto completely neutralizes left-handed hitters and mm-hmm. Rodgers, I mean, Rodgers neutralizes everybody, but specifically against right-handed hitters, he has held opponents to 5.05 OPS, which is like sick good, you know. Like I've always found him entertaining with the way he pitches and how low he gets. Like, I'm fascinated by his delivery. I mean,
it's insane looking.
Yeah, and you know, he's tall. He's got these long arms, and like, look, he comes with a 1 inch. I don't know how he doesn't cut his hand like at least once a game. But you know, in the end, like, they get a very talented, awkward, weird, deceptive. You know, all of those labels like fit the bill for Tyler Rogers. And he's going to be a huge weapon for them. Like, he's going to, like, the right-handers, he's impossible to hit from the right side. I mean, good luck, right? But I do think they gave up a lot. But I think the Mets have a lot to give up all of a sudden, right? Because they've had their farm system has had a very good year. I guess they've done a pretty good job of developing players to the point where, like, Drew Gilbert, who was, I believe he's a former top 10 prospect, fell into, you know, in top 15 status. So that tells you that they have a lot to give, right?
He was top five when they got him 2 years ago, right, which tells you, to your point, how much depth this farm system has built up and how thin it was when they had acquired him. And a lot of those prospects, right, because that was the same summer that they got Ryan Clifford, the same summer that they got Luis Angel Acuna, who I think at one point was like their second-ranked prospect. Now you wouldn't have him anywhere near there. And I think that's part of why it stings a bit less. Like, yes, there was the initial like sticker shock of, I'm surprised that they traded three bodies and three of whom that I've heard of and a lot of fans are familiar with. But when you think about it, because they have deepened this farm system, it allows them to do this sort of thing, even for a rental reliever. And the big thing to remember is, of the three guys that they traded here and like the top prospect that they traded in the Helsley trade, which we'll get to, David Stearns didn't acquire any of these players. He is evaluating them differently than Billy Epler did, than we may have. Than even like other people who used to be in the front office who are no longer there. So that, I think, also says a lot. I talked about it a lot with Joe DeMay on the podcast a couple weeks ago, but you could tell with Tidwell that Stearns didn't believe in him the way he believed in the other prospects, because he had no problem jockeying him between AAA and major leagues and back and forth on the taxi squad. Whereas, like, we still haven't seen Nolan McLean. We still haven't seen Brandon Sproat. And I think those actions with the way he treats certain young prospects versus others probably gives you an indication on who he believes in and who he doesn't. Like, I think Luis Angel Acuna is in a similar discussion of, they've been a little bit more willing to be flexible with him and move him back and forth because maybe they don't believe in him as much as some of these other guys.
Yeah, and I think all of that is merit. But I think it goes back to, you know, something Sandy Alderson used to talk about. Like, he wanted to get the farm system to a point where you had prospects that were going to make an impact in the major leagues for you, and prospects that are going to make a major league impact for other teams, right? Like, you know, not every prospect is going to make it. Not every prospect is going to make it for you. And I think the Mets are in a better position to say they can do that right now, which is what enabled them to make these trades. You know, it's not to say that Gilbert wasn't good. I mean, he was, you know, he had a strong couple of weeks in the minors. And I think even Justin the other day wrote about how, well, maybe they bring him in for center field and they find help elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, obviously that's not an option, which may increase the need for them to find, you know, an outfielder specifically, because, like, I don't care what anybody tells you. Like, Jeff McNeil is not an everyday center fielder. You know, he's just not, and it's not going to work. It never works, right? So, you know, and so now that Gilbert's not an option, you know, maybe that's the direction they're going, and maybe they have. I mean, I really don't want it to be Luis Robert or Cedric Mullins. That's not. I mean, I'll take McNeil at that point. I think it's. I think it just put them they're now in a better position to make these, you know, what appears to be high risk trades of prospects for rentals. Whereas before, you know, they were gun shy after the Pete Crow Armstrong deal for Javi Baez. Although I know a lot of people are still down on that train. I don't want to get into that too much, but I feel like, you know, those are the trades that everybody had been pining for the Mets to make for years and years and years, and they finally make it. And I'm like, well, why'd you do that? And well, I mean, you can't have it both ways. So risk is part of the game. They took a risk. It didn't work out, and that's it. You know, so, you know, he just happened to be one of those prospects that are destined to make it elsewhere. So I'm not really bothered by that one, even though he's turned into a great player. Like, you know, so, but at any rate.
That one bothers me, but there's nothing we can do about it now.
But, you know, honestly, I don't want to talk about it too much because I know it burns a lot of people, but I don't think it was bothering too many people at the time. I really don't. I don't remember people losing their minds over trading the prospect for Javi Baez. I think they felt pretty much the same way they feel now, where it's like, okay, well, it's a big prospect, but they have needs and they're going for it. And of course, it amounted to nothing because they tanked that year, but.
Thumbs down.
Yeah, that was the thumbs down. But again, I don't want to talk too much about it. But I think these are the you know, risk is part of the game, right? And I think Stearns took a risk today. You know, in both trades, you know, he traded a lot. You know, he traded what, 1, 2, 3, 4 top 15 prospects. So that's, you know, that's a lot. Like, no matter how you slice it, like I think we can rationalize it by saying, well, you know, now they have a lot of prospects, or you know, their prospects are viewed differently today than they were maybe last year, you know, positively and negatively. But in the end, you know, they're taking a risk. But I think they realize that this is the time to take a risk. You know, there's no because if they don't, they know they're in trouble. So, you know, now their bullpen, like I said, is championship grade at the risk of, you know, some, you know, help in the future from some of these prospects. But who knows? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, maybe these guys walk and none of these prospects ever make it. And then the Mets won the trade if they get to deep into the playoffs. So,
I mean, you never truly know, right? Like,
right.
The A turned into the guy that everybody thought Jared Kelnick was going to turn into. So it's sometimes the guys hit, sometimes they don't.
Right. Sometimes. And I seem to recall at the beginning of 2019, when everybody was losing their minds over trading Kelenic for Cano and Diaz. Well, guess who won that trade? You know, certainly wasn't the Mariners. You know, I'll tell you that right now. So, you know, I think the Mets did just fine. As much of a risk as it seemed to be, like, I think they did just fine. So the Mets could do, if the Mets get to the World Series or win the World Series because of these moves, I don't think anybody's going to be crying about these trades, you know?
Speaking of those moves, the Mets made a second trade a few hours later this afternoon, early evening. They acquired not only a great reliever, but now probably the best 1-2 combo in terms of stadium music for pitchers, because Ryan Helsley, the former closer for the Cardinals, comes into Hell's Bells. And then, of course, you have Edwin Diaz with the Narcos trumpets. It's going to be, as the kids say, scenes at Citi Field through the rest of the year. But Helsley, with a 3 ERA, hasn't been as effective this year as in past years, but he's still been very solid. He's got 21 saves. He's blown 5. So a little bit back and forth there, though. A lot of those blown saves came in a row earlier in the summer, so maybe he's righted himself. The big thing with Helsley is his fastball. Not only does his fastball hit 99 miles an hour, it actually averages 99 miles an hour. We've seen this guy hit 104 at times in his time with the Cardinals and in the major leagues. And the pitch that people don't talk about enough is his slider. It's what makes his fastball so much more effective. Opposing hitters are batting 092 against his slider this year. And unlike a lot of relievers, at least according to Brooks Baseball, Helsley throws 6 different pitches, which makes him a very, very appealing and versatile arm who will now be acting as the Mets setup man. The Mets trade their 8th-ranked prospect, Jesus Baez, middle infielder, who I think is going to turn into a third baseman at some point down the line. And then a couple of lesser, no minor leaguers. You have Nate Dome, their 14th-ranked prospect, and then an unranked minor leaguer in Frank Ellisall. So, Mike, what was your reaction to this second trade of the day?
You know, I think, again, like, they gave up a lot in terms of ranked prospects, but I also think you know, again, like risk is part of the game. I really don't. I feel like it's great. It's a great move. I think it's more. I'm trying to find the right word. I think Rodgers made their bullpen elite. Right, between Rodgers, Soto, Garrett, Diaz, you know, Stanek. Also, if he can like not walk people or whatever. Now, you know, they're getting what's nice about the moves they've made here is that, like, with Rodgers and now Helsley, maybe to a lesser extent, they're solving their walks problem with these guys more than anything, or at least trying to, because, you know, they're pretty good. Their command has been pretty good. And I will say about Helsley, he's given up one run in the last 6 weeks. So, you know, the 3 ERA is, of course, like, it all matters. But as of late, like, he's giving up nothing. He's a different pitcher than he was earlier in the year. So, like, what he's clearly made an adjustment. And, you know, perhaps, you know, the Mets have, can, you know, in theory, you know, bought a little low on what he's doing as of late. So, and, you know, obviously the track record matters. He's a rental. But look, they have as good a 1-2 punch, you know, down, if, you know, especially if Helsley continues down this path, you know, between him and Diaz, you know, the game is over for the Mets in the sixth or seventh inning at this point, which I know is hard to get to with this rotation. But at this point, you know, their bullpen is probably, I mean, give me a better bullpen in Major League Baseball right now, right? So I can't think of another one on paper anyway. Of course,
the game's pretty crazy to say considering where they were a week ago and even how they looked as recently as the last couple of days before today's game where their bullpen was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, you know, I know these, you know, anything can happen, people get hurt, but, you know, we've seen, like, it seems like on a daily basis, the Mets were turning over 20 to 30% of their roster. It was all with the pitching. Now, hopefully they don't have to do that now, at least not to not at the rate they were doing it. I think that David Stern said, like, the bullpen was the priority. He was very public about that. And I mean, certainly he's, you know, he set that expectation and he's lived up to it. You know, they prioritize his bullpen and they got better in a big way over the last week. I know Soto had the one bad outing the other day, but a lot of that was, you know, because of a mistake he made, you know, but I think, you know, between these three relievers plus what they had in Garrett and of course Diaz. And again, like, find me a better bullpen. You know, this is championship grade and they just need to get to October. But as I said, you know, they're not going to get to October if they don't start scoring more runs, which probably gets us to our next topic, you know, but this is a great move nonetheless, you know. You look at someone like Jesus Baez, and I agree, like, he probably profiles more as a corner infielder, but, you know, they have obviously a log jam at short. Like, he's never going to sniff shortstop for this team. And at third base, like, they have three players at the major league level who are third basemen right now. So, like, you know, and that gets into my point about, like, prospects that ultimately get dealt, right? Like, sometimes you cultivate prospects for other teams, and maybe, like, Baez is one of those players. Even if he turns into a great player, you know, the risk is worth – the juice is worth the squeeze here because they're filling an immediate need to try and win the World Series now, which, again, like, if this bullpen, you know, certainly will be the best in October, you know, going into the tournament anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And it's – you know, when you think about where this bullpen was last Wednesday, even let alone earlier in the season, you know, you went from having your 7, 8, 9 guys on your best night where everything's set up, everybody's properly rested. On your best night, your 7, 8, 9 guys were Stanek, Reed, Garrett, Diaz. Two of those guys are now your, like, fifth and sixth inning guys, or come in situationally, or on days where some of the top guys maybe aren't available. Yeah, now your seventh, eighth, ninth guys are Rodgers, Helsley, and Diaz with two different lefties they can go to if they need to make a change for a matchup. Like, it is insane how much deeper they have gotten. And that's the one thing we also have to talk about, right? When you acquire new top line relievers, it takes the guys who are, like, pretty good for you, and it pushes them down, and just from that, your bullpen looks so much better because, you know, Reed Garrett's been very, very good. Stanek makes me want to throw up, but you know, the guy's got great stuff sometimes. But you take those guys who have been like either pretty good to okay, and all of a sudden they're your fourth, fifth, sixth most important relievers instead of your second and third. That is a huge difference.
Right. And if you don't have Helsley or Diaz, you know, or Rogers on a given day, like you're now not losing anything by having like Garrett be that eighth inning guy, right? I mean, and I think, you know, we saw that, what was it, yesterday, in yesterday's game or the game before, where Diaz wasn't available and they didn't have these guys, and I guess with Soto's, I can't remember, like whatever, they didn't have the relievers lined up and they lost pretty much because it was yesterday with Buto, like where he gave up the five runs in a situation you probably shouldn't have been pitching in, but nobody was available, you know, so, you know, and that's, I think this helps solve that. I mean, obviously they're better and they have great relievers now, but this also helps, you know, helps them get through the dog days where when people need rest in the middle of the pennant race, like there's no drop off anymore. And exactly. Now they need to get to that point, you know, with the lineup where like, you know, everybody like 1 through 9 is a drop off. Like it's like just a giant abyss. Like don't hit. Like it's just maddening.
It drives you crazy. What's next for the Mets? And Mike, you teed it up, but I mean, nobody more than me has been yelling about the offense since maybe even before it was appropriate to do so.
I think you've been yelling about the offense since 2011.
And for most of the seasons, I feel like I have been correct, but it's been an issue for pretty much the whole season. They've had little spurts around there. But for the most part, they're not scoring runs to the level in which they should be scoring runs. They're not scoring runs in the way that I think the front office and coaching staff envisioned that they would. They built this team to be good enough with their pitching, but carried by their offense. And I would argue that very, very few times this season has the offense ever carried the team. It has mostly been on the backs of their pitchers pitching like out of their minds. That's why the team was so good those first couple months. Yes, their offense did average quite a few runs back then, but it still was never quite clicking. A lot of it was off the backs of their stars or just like really big, like 12 run performances out of nowhere that kind of like threw the numbers out of whack a little bit. But the runners in scoring position has been, I mean, I said this in this week's podcast, since opening night when Juan Soto struck out against Josh Hader in Houston, it has been a problem for the entire team. Everybody except for Pete Alonso, and now even he can't get a hit, has been bad with runners in scoring position for the whole season. It is the reason why, despite having a top 6 offensive war in the sport, despite being, I think, 8th in home runs coming into today, they're 15th in runs scored. They're middle of the pack, and it's because they can't get these clutch hits, and it's just been a consistent issue the whole year. And we've gotten reports today from Anthony DiComo and I think a few others that they are looking for a bat now. The bullpen has been addressed. I'm sure they'll probably look at starting pitchers as well, but we have had confirmation today that they're still looking into a bat.
Assurances, right? But not confirmation, yeah. Assurances.
Assurances, yes. Confirmations of assurances. And what caliber bat is that going to be? We have no idea. Luis Robert keeps coming up. I'll let you kind of rant about that in a second. You know, is there a guy out there that hasn't been mentioned yet that could be a surprise? Maybe we don't know he's available or we don't think that the Mets are involved. One thing I'll say is in the Stearns era, there's been very, very few leaks. Not a single fucking person, excuse my language, connected them to Tyler Rogers at any point. That came out of absolutely nowhere. And there's been one or two tiny reports of like maybe they'll be interested in Helsley, but there really wasn't much smoke there either. We really don't find out that the Mets are going to do something until they do something. So it would not surprise me if there is a hitter that we are not thinking about that they're looking at, because they have to fix this offense. It's not going to get better because they hope it does.
Well, as the owner likes to say, hope isn't a strategy, right?
Exactly.
You know, he's the first one to say it. But before I talk about that person you mentioned for center field, I want to point out that over the last 38 games, including today, in which they suffered a shutout, they've scored 3.82 runs per game, and that shit just won't fly. No. You can't. That's not major. That's not going to win games. Like, it doesn't matter how well you pitch. It doesn't matter what they do to the bullpen, right? I mean, the bullpen pitch.
Right,
the
that'd
bullpen
be tough to do with the Phillies starting staff.
The bullpen pitch well today. Really well today without Rodgers or Helsley, and it's mounted to a loss. So they need to be able to score runs. You know, I know it's always hard to come back from 4 or 5 runs down, but it's for this team, it's hard to come back from 2 runs down right now. So I personally don't believe the names that you're hearing primarily through media channels are the answer. I know Cedric Mullins, is a perceived upgrade. I don't get how anyone would sell me anyone on Luis Robert being an upgrade right now. I mean, as I told you earlier, there's a reason why bad teams are bad, and it's usually because of the players. And if you look at Luis Robert, that's not really you don't really have to look too far into, he's playing a premium position. I'll just leave it at that. Right. I'm not going to say anything, nice or productive about him. I just don't think that's a good move for them to make. I don't think that helps them. I do think, and I think Andy Martino reported this, has been talking about this on several occasions over the last week. He's been talking about Brandon Lau from the Rays. Now, I think that's the kind of move that, he's the blue collar type player, which, fits their needs perfectly. He said yesterday on Baseball Night in New York that they've been trying to get him for over a year. So I really wouldn't be surprised if they, figure out how to procure him from Tampa Bay. I'm sure he'd love to get out of that, out of that situation. And I think he would go a long way. I don't think they need to find a Yoenis Cespedes. They just need somebody here who's going to have a pulse, really. I mean, it's like they need someone who's just gonna who's gonna get on base and create some noise out there. And he does a lot of things well, in my opinion. And I think he's always been he's not, again, like not gonna knock your socks off. The name doesn't jump off the page, but he's the kind of player that makes good teams great. Like, he's just a big part of the engine, in my opinion. And I think that's the kind of player that they could pursue. Maybe they look at Suarez, as a designated hitter, and they stick with what they have. I wouldn't be opposed to that either. I mean, obviously that's a big offensive move for them. But I don't know, he's the top offensive piece on the market, and I don't know that they're going to be willing to surrender the prospect capital required to get him. But I don't think they need to be stuck on getting a center fielder or stuck on getting a second baseman or stuck on getting a third baseman. There are multiple ways to improve, to make the single improvement that they're likely to make. And and I think they could do that without, sacrificing playing time for some of these young third basemen that they're arguably kidding themselves over. I mean, continue to kid themselves over. But I don't want to speak too negatively about it, but let's get real in some of these cases. Lau actually has, I didn't even realize, he has a 480 slug and a 119 WRC plus. Like, he'd be a huge get if they could pull that one off. And he's the kind of player that fits Stearns' it whets his appetite. He likes these kinds of players. I think that would be great if they could pull that one off. I actually like that over Suarez because, like I said, it's easy to get attracted to the home runs and the production, but and yes, he would be great. Don't get me wrong, but ultimately they can get him, and if the top three in this lineup or top four in this lineup, for that matter, don't start hitting, it's not going to matter what Suarez does either, right? So, and same can be said for anyone they get. So, but they have to do something. They have to do something to rejigger the lineup, right? Because they're just dead men walking out there. I mean, it is just painful, inning after inning of the same crap. And I don't think it's really just, well, they don't hit with runners in scoring position. Like, that's that stat, both on the positive side and the negative side, right? That's always an anomaly. Like, it's what's going on in between. Like, it's the quality of the at-bats, right? And things like that. And the quality of the at-bats are so poor. And I would even say that, you know, at times about Soto, where sometimes he just goes up there and he just doesn't even take the bat off his shoulder. And you've seen that with Nimmo. We saw, you know, like, how many times have these guys just gone up there and it's good morning, good afternoon, good night, and they don't even take the bat off their shoulders, or they take the first two strikes and swing one over their heads. You know, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's the quality of the at-bats. It's not just runners in scoring position or they're a single sitting team. It's not a single, you know, superficial stat. It's what's not happening, which is causing those stats to suck, you know.
Swag CEO, if you unmute yourself, you're up.
Yeah, I know you guys were just getting into the lineup, but really more a question kind of on the starting pitching end. You know, mm-hmm. I know they've been talking about wanting ideally a guy that would make a start during a playoff game, but given the, you know, restrictions of homes and just kind of, you know, how many of the starting pitchers and the staff are really on some kind of limitation, is it really that beyond the pale that they might just go after a lesser end starting pitcher who can just kind of expand to a 6-man rotation and really kind of solve a lot of these innings limitation issues via just, I guess, having like more space in between starts? Or is that not really a consideration and they're really just looking to solidify the top end of things?
I honestly think, thank you for your question, man. I honestly think that they're probably more likely looking at the depth guys than top end guys. Maybe they would take a lottery ticket on a Sandy Alcantara. Abby Mastracco mentioned him yesterday on the podcast. Maybe even like a Shane Bieber. That's even more of a lottery ticket because he's not even back from his injury yet. But aside from those kind of guys, I do think that depth is likely what they're going to be looking at. You know, could they look at like Charlie Morton, who has really bad numbers on the year but has been a lot better recently? He's 40 years old, so you're not going to get a ton out of him. Could you get him on the cheap from the Orioles? Or even like, would David Stearns be interested in another reunion with Adrian Hauser? He was pretty bad for the Mets last year, but he has a sub-2 ERA this season with the White Sox. You know, you, again, probably don't have to give up a ton to get him. You just kind of asking him to be that like fifth, sixth type starter, give you some innings. Stearns has ties to Hauser, I think, going back to when he was in Houston. So he's already had him in three different organizations already. You know, could that be the caliber of pitcher they might be looking at this point? Like, I that wouldn't surprise me.
I think it depends, truthfully. I think it depends on where they think Senga and Manaea are and how they're projecting forward towards the end of the season, right? Because, you know, if they don't think that, you know, they're like, Manaea is not even using all of his pitches yet, which is kind of strange to me. Like, why is he here and if he's not ready, you know?
It's interesting.
You know, and Senga is always, I mean, you know what I think of Senga. You know, he's out there, he's great, but he just doesn't seem to be out there very often over the last couple of years. So, like, I think, and, you know, now the situation with Holmes, where, like, I just think he's way spent at this point. And I think he did whatever he could to, you know, try and, you know, be effective beyond his career high, beyond his career mark in innings. But, like, this mm-hmm. is just, like, he's a human being. Like, it's not, like, he was great at the beginning. And, like, right now, like, he doesn't look the same. And so, you know, you have three pitchers.
It's tough to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but I think we all get it, right? I think everybody sees the same thing, where it's like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, no kidding. He's probably tired at this point. So to that end, like, I think it would behoove them to aim higher than depth moves, because I think that depth move is coming in Tyler McGill eventually. And so, like, I wouldn't necessarily trade pieces to get something that they already have, which is pretty much a low-level rotation, a low-leverage rotation spot. that they may or may not use all the time, right? Because of off days and all that stuff. Like, they're not going to use a six-man rotation, you know, if they have an off day every week, because that's going to screw that always screws everybody up. So, right. So I think they need to decide again, like, where Minaya is and where they think it's going, where Senga is, where they think he's going. It's really Montas who's the wild card here, because like he's like you get someone who looks like Cy Young on Monday and then someone who looks like Young Cy on Sunday, like two completely different. I'm serious. Like, you never know. Like, sometimes he's like lights out, and the other times like he trips over his own shoelaces out there. So, you know, and that's I think been the story of Montas's most career since he started having those shoulder problems. Like, he's just very inconsistent. Which is why I question the signing to begin with. But at any rate, he's also injury prone. But at any rate, I can come up with other things if you like. But
you got. I see people dropping off as the hate for Montas.
No, it's not. Look, he is what he is, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like, he is what he is. So that's why I think they need to find a quality starting pitcher. Now, is it going to be an ace? No, I mean, they're not going to give up the pieces for an ace, but is Mitch Keller an ace? No. And should they get him? Yes. I mean, he's everything they need both now and over the next couple of seasons. And he's under control for the next 2 or 3 years. It just makes too much. It's always made too much sense to me for them to try and get Mitch Keller. Doesn't mean they will, but that's the kind of pitcher I would give up pieces for. I wouldn't give up pitching necessarily for it, but that's the idea with him. Where I think they should go with the pitching. But you could be right. They could just go for, five and six guys like they did coming into the season and, try and get, small sample success stories out of them.
Yeah, and the other thing that's on the table that, again, we haven't gotten to this point. I think we will at some point. There are two pitching prospects in AAA who are both pitching really, really well, who are both thought of very highly. It would surprise me if we didn't at least see one of them eventually.
So I think there are some issues with at least one of them, and I'm going to look at the other as I speak about one of them. I'm going to start with Nolan McLean. The issue with him that I can see, it's not about whether or not I think he can contribute at this level. I do think he can do that. I think it's an innings issue. Like, he's was at 109 last year. He's at 98 right now, which means he has about 40 innings left. And he's not coming up right now, so that means he's going to spend some of those coins in the minors that, he doesn't necessarily have if he comes here. So I just don't know if he has enough innings left to join this rotation on a regular basis. And there doesn't seem right now like that it makes a lot of sense to put him in the bullpen, because they now have a super bullpen on paper. So I don't really see a runway for McLean this year. As for Sproat, go ahead while I look at this.
You could make an argument, though, if you're kind of having this issue right now with Clay Holmes is running out of gas, he probably can't be relied upon to give you like real starting pitcher innings. Is there a scenario, at least for the regular season? I don't think they would have to do this in the playoffs, but, do you have a McLean Holmes kind of like duo starting games, and they each can give you 50, 60 pitches, cover 70% of the game and get you to your guys. Is that something that they could look to do? Some of these teams will piggyback like that. We haven't seen the Mets do it a ton, but it could be a bit of a creative solve if you don't want to necessarily overhaul things too much.
I think they could. But I think it gets a little dicey at that point. I think they'd always prefer to just have, that rotation and not like do these, pseudo bullpen games like that, or however you want to slice it out, where you skip a guy and bring, go every other start or whatever. Now, as for Sproat, like, it looks like there are more innings left in his bank than there are for McLean, because Sproat was at 116 last year. He's at 90 now. So you figure he has about 55 innings left or so. So there could be some runway maybe for a start to give a guy some rest But I think they really ultimately have to figure out like what they're going to do with Holmes, because I don't know that they can keep him in the rotation. And if they don't keep him in the rotation, and they have to figure this out now, because this is all the runway they have left to make moves. If they think it's not sustainable to keep him in the rotation, he can go to the bullpen, they need to get a starting pitcher. And they need to get a starting pitcher, you know, who's not just competent. It needs to be competent plus. So, and that's hard, you know, that's expensive this time of year, especially as we get down, you know, as people see the Mets maybe bent over a barrel with this situation a little bit. So no, it's true. I mean, it's everybody knows the deal with Holmes. So they may, you know, take advantage of that in a trade, but you know, it's the, and then there's the question of, okay, well, you know, do we want to prioritize this over the bat? What's more important? Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think the offense at the moment, is more important, because it's just like I said, there's sleepwalking out there.
Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, you have, whether they're great or not, whether you have to get a little funky with it or not, they're gonna have internal options to help with the starting pitching. Again, like, might not be the best, we don't know. But they have some options.
Yeah.
They have no options with the offense. No. The offense is what it is. They have hoped throughout the year that, hey, these guys, they're going to hit to the back of their baseball cards. We see the metrics. Like, maybe there's bad luck. Maybe it's just law of averages, whatever it is. That's going to catch up. It's July 30th. It's not catching up. No. They've scored 2 runs in the last 23 innings since the Vientos Grand Slam. They just have too many of these blackouts where – a lot of time it was the bottom of the lineup, and then it was like, okay, which of the 4 stars aren't hitting? Now it's like none of the 4 stars are hitting. Soto gets hurt. We should probably see him by Friday, but he's not hitting. Lindor's still kind of struggling. Alonso has been awful for about a month now. One of the worst months of his career, without a doubt. Nimmo's still been pretty good, but then, you know, your heavy guys are not hitting, and then you're relying on the bottom of the lineup, which is all young, unproven players who had a hot stretch. Now they're like cooling off a little bit too. You can't really blame them. I mean, I talk about it all the time. We already talked about it on this episode, but like, they need offense. Yeah, they need it badly. And I cannot have another 2022 where they just like think it's going to be fine and they don't do much to address it. And then it's like, oh, surprise, it's October and they can't fucking hit.
Well, right. And I agree. But I will say about the starting pitching, like, if they're going to make a move for a rotation piece, I think it needs to be a controllable piece. And because they're going to have starting pitching needs, you know, in the off season too. And if you can check one of those boxes now, you know, I think that goes a long way, you know, towards their off-season blueprint, you know, at least solving one, you know, one area of that. So, but yes, I agree. You know, the offense, I don't know that they're going to make a move for, you know, more than one primary piece, but I do think they need to solve at least one position player, one of these positional holes that they have. It's a mess, and I think it's getting worse. So, that's all there is to it. It's fine, but that's what this time of year is for, right? You know, this time of year to solve your problems, and that's what they've done in the bullpen. They have 24 hours or so to solve this, you know, other area of concern, which I think they will. I think they will.
I agree. I don't know who it's going to be. I think figuring out who the hitter is going to be and what position they play has been the hardest thing to figure out of any of their needs, I think. You know, we didn't expect Tyler Rogers, but like, we kind of had an idea what they were looking for in the bullpen. We kind of have an idea, we think at least, what they're looking for in the rotation. Who the hell knows what they're thinking of with the lineup? Because you could make a case for and against plenty of positions, right? Like, yeah, they could need more steady offense at third base, but like, you've got 3 different guys who can play it at varying levels. I think center field is the most obvious, but there's just like not that many good hitting center fielders that are actually available. It's a tough premium position to fill. And then it's like, okay, do they get like a corner outfielder that uses more of the DH spot. I don't think they want to put Nimmo in center. It makes it a little bit more complicated. And again, I think that the hitting, some of the hitters who are available, we might not even know are available right now. And it just makes it hard to predict who that's going to be. But this team has invested a lot in themselves. The front office and the owner spent a ton of money in the offseason. There is a ton of expectations on this team after making the NLCS last year. Pretty much every home game is sold out. It's a big deal. They put a lot of resources into this, and you don't know who's going to be back. Pete Alonso, this could be his last ride. We don't know that he's coming back. We already know he's not signing in season, so we're going to have a redo of what happened last year, and he's going to be coming off a much better season. With all that in mind, you kind of have to go for it this year. You don't do it without any regard for future years. And Stearns would never do that anyways, but they're going to be aggressive. We've seen that with the bullpen now. This is the most aggressive I think we've ever seen the Mets approach their bullpen at a trade deadline, at least in a long time. We've seen it there. I think they're going to have to do it with the offense too, because again, it's after spending all those resources and investing everything they have, are they really just going to be like, well, like the math will even out by the end of the season? Like there's 2 months left. Anything can happen in a 2 month sample, good or bad.
Right. And it's also worth mentioning that the three relievers that they've gotten, they're all, you know, elite relievers. They have done that without surrendering a top seven prospect. So there is prospect currency to work with. Should they consider getting, you know, that high-end starting pitcher or a top-level position players, you know, and it's not to say they should do that. Like, I mean, I wouldn't certainly not trade any of their, you know, pitching prospects for a position player. But the point is that I think they have maneuverability with the prospect crop that they have below, you know, that's lower than their top five to fill these needs. And I agree with you. I think they should, the time is now to go for it, right? If it's not now, when is it? Right. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Like you said, so shore it up, lock and load it and go for it. Like they have the best bullpen on paper, you know, be the best team on paper and prove it out. Right.
Couple updates before we start to, talk about tomorrow and just wrap up everything. Devin Williams for the Yankees just blew a save. It is not Brandon Lau, but Josh Lowe hitting a two-run homer in the ninth. So if you really hate the Yankees, feel free to laugh. Also, Mike Soroka, former Brave, just got traded from the Nationals to the Cubs, according to Ken Rosenthal. So another arm off the board there, but likely does not affect the Mets too much. And we do have another request to speak. What's up, Sam?
What's up? What's good, guys?
How's it going?
Good. I just saw a report. I think Cole Sherman. Sorry, that's my puppy. He gets crazy when I get on the phone.
Oh, good.
I just saw a report from Joel Sherman that said the Astros are potentially looking at some of the infielders that we have, like Beatty, Mauricio, and then interestingly Jeff McNeil. Do you think about like the potential? I don't think Stearns is very high on McNeil. Just based on his name being floated around and, you know, his decline, you know, like that he can play a good position, but I don't think he's, you know, a lot of positions, but I don't think he's a playoff caliber starting center fielder. We saw him have a couple bad routes on the ball on Monday, and, you know, his kind of weak arm cost him a run. Mm-hmm. What do you kind of think about? Oh, and Volpe just tied the game. Well, anyways, what do you think about kind of moving him around, like the potential of moving him around? I know he's got some money left on the deal. I don't think they would trade a Beatty or a Mauricio at this point. But, you know, what is like the interest level or value of a McNeil and then going out and getting a legit center fielder? Because they kind of do have those, a lot of, you know, second base depth or middle infield depth, you know?
I mean, yeah. I think it's a good question. I mean, I think Jeff McNeil is one of those players who has more value to the Mets than he does anywhere else. And I think for the reasons you pointed out, right? I mean, it's not, I agree. He's not sustainable in center field. If it's very hard for me to see them see him as a starter out there, in October. I think he's having a better year than people are giving him credit for. And he's actually been a better hitter in center field than he has been at second base, believe it or not. I mean, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
He's still the same. It's still the same. He hasn't really evolved or changed or really reinvented himself. I think, he has a little bit better luck this year. You know, some of those balls are falling, whereas maybe last year, they weren't. But is he someone with any trade with a lot of trade value to get what they need? I mean, probably not. I mean, he's pretty expensive for what he is, even though he's not expensive, by baseball terms anymore. But he's $13 million a year. I think he has 2 years left on his deal. I don't see a seller taking on McNeil. To be honest with you, for anything and anything of value in return, I just don't. I mean, I think they've tried to move him over the last couple of off seasons, no avail, for the reasons we're talking about. I mean, he was wise to take the deal Billy Epler gave him two and a half years ago, because this is why. Like, his game didn't age well, and it hasn't really aged that well, and it's fine. I mean, good for him. I mean, I wish someone would offer me that for. I just don't see that as a movable piece. And again, I think he does have value to this roster. He's still a good contact guy, and he's competent anywhere you put him on the field. And why shouldn't trade him? I mean, they should be able to use him as a complimentary piece on this roster. I don't think it helps them to move him, for anything else, unless they're getting a stud in return.
Yeah. To give a little more context to the report that Sam shared, it was Joel Sherman saying the Astros have inquired on the availability of McNeil, as well as Brett Beatty and Ronnie Mauricio specifically. I don't think the team's trading Mauricio. I think they're seeing a lot from him right now, even though it's raw. I think he's not going to be available at all. Like you said, I just don't know why they would trade McNeil. He's helping them. Again, he shouldn't be playing center field, especially regularly, but he has so much value with the positional versatility that he has, as well as the solid offense that he's provided them this year. I just don't see why they would do that unless they were getting something that they really, really needed in return. It's almost like, I feel like you're subtracting from the team to even trade him away to get something else. Like, I'm not sure if you're actually getting better in that scenario. I could see Beatty maybe being available for something, but I think it would have to probably be something more than we would think he would get. Like if the Astros are calling you and saying hey, we'll give you Hunter Brown for Brett Beatty. Oh. You don't let them hang up the phone.
Yeah, it's like, would you like anything else? I mean,
we'll give you another prospect if you want. But barring something crazy like that, which I have a hard time believing that would ever happen unless the Astros think they can unlock something at Brett Beatty. I'm not sure that they're an ideal trade partner. Because the Astros are looking for offense too.
Yeah. And as for Beatty, I mean, they have been clearly investing themselves in Brett Beatty since he came up, through all the struggles and all of the concerns about his makeup. I'll never get over that story that came when he was quoted as saying, well, sometimes I take pitches off or whatever he said. And I'm who in their right mind takes pitches off? Just forget it. Forget this at bat. Right. I mean, I just can't get over that one, but they see, and all the people I've talked to about his ability to hang at this level, and his mental state and all that, they, at this point, if they trade him, I think that would just be silly. They need to see this through, at least through the end of the year, before they reassess the position. And to be fair to Beatty, I think he's been solid defensively, solid at third, solid enough at second. And he has had a better year offensively than I expected. So
He's been league average offensively.
Yeah, and I think that's all you really need from him right now. If he's league average, you know, and he's above replacement level, then I think that you've won the year with him, because that's a step forward. Is he showing signs of being the star everybody thought he'd be? No, but he's still young, and I think he's at least right now owed the opportunity for the rest of the season. I wouldn't marginalize him or even consider trade. I don't see the value in trading him right now, again, unless you're getting someone overpay for him, right?
Right.
And the same for Mauricio. And I think Mauricio, I know you haven't really thought he's going to pan out, but he's certainly showing signs. You know, he's got this.
He's starting to sway me more than he ever has before. There is something. He's just got something like kind of intangible going on that I'm not sure I saw coming. But
yeah, I mean, he's got great bat speed. He's this big, tall guy who doesn't really profile well, you know, at an athletic position. But you know, he's had some, in my opinion, some IQ type issues in this first stint, back in the major leagues. But I also think, you know, just like with every other prospect, like he's owed patience. And you have to just kind of see what it looks like over, especially, you know, they're going to give Beatty all, you know, 3 years. I mean, they can give Mauricio more than 3 months, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. Trout Cole, you are on with us. Unmute yourself and what you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey there. What's up, I think they got to give these guys some days off. Like, I keep hearing about Francisco Lindor playing how many games in a row, Pete Alonso playing how many games in a row. I just think everyone needs a day off from now and again. And if they're mired in a slump, give them some time off. I don't think that's crazy.
I'm just great. I think that's a great point. I think, you know, especially as these players get older, you know, and that's one thing people forget. Like, Lindor's in his 30s now. Alonso's 30. Mm-hmm. You know, this game can beat the crap out of you, you know, especially as you get older. I mean, and I think it wouldn't hurt. You know, you can just give him at bats. You don't have to be in the field, you know, for a day or two, and you know, you can give a. I don't think you're losing anything in the short term by putting Acuna in short, you know, for a couple of days if you have to. I don't know who they'd put at first necessarily. Maybe they could put Vientos at first and give Alonso a blow as a DH or just days off entirely. You know, so you can piggyback that with, you know, like getaway day like today. Maybe, you know, they can start to do that, but it's also hard at the same time. You know, to make those kind of, well, I agree, and maybe rest would be beneficial. It's also, you know, they're in essentially tied with the Phillies in the division, and it's difficult to, it's hard, right? You know, because you want to play your best players, and you don't want to lose with your best players being on the bench. So, but I do agree, like sometimes, you know, it can help even if it costs you in a single day. It can help over the long term.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's like with everything, there's balance, right? You know, there's a middle gray area between playing like 80, 90 games in a row. For Alonso, he's played like, what, 300-400 games in a row or something insane. The difference between that and just like a day off every now and then, especially when, you know, they're struggling or somebody's dealing with something, because these guys are always dinged up more than you think they are.
They're hurt. They are all hurting at this point in the year. All of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm hurting getting up in the morning. Can you imagine how they feel like, you know, on a daily basis doing this? It is tough. Believe me, it is tough.
My back hurts right now and I'm sitting down.
I don't know what to tell you, bro.
we're getting old.
Hey, speak for yourself. I'm going to live forever.
Let me ask you one thing, and then we'll start to wrap up. We've, you know, the last couple calls and just like some of the things we've been talking about, we've brought up a lot of these guys, right? The four baby Mets, if you want to call them that, the four young infielders with Acuna, Vientos, Beatty, and Mauricio. Now, I don't think they're going to trade Mauricio, as we said. It's probably unlikely, agreed with you, that like they're probably not going to trade Beatty, at least at the midway point this year. that kind of leaves Vientos and Acuña, and I still have a hard time believing all four of these guys are going to be here past 6 p.m. tomorrow. It's possible. There's nothing forcing them necessarily to trade any of these guys. But if they are going to trade one of them in the next less than 24 hours at this point, who do you think it's going to be? Do you think it is going to be Vientos with all the smoke from Martino earlier this week, or could it be Acuña?
Well, even before Martino came out with that report that, you know, there were
some people didn't like for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a matter of liking or disliking. It's a matter of how all this fits, right? I mean, you had to believe that they were going to be adding to the lineup in some way, shape, or form. You have to believe it because they haven't done it yet. You have to believe that they're going to be adding to this lineup one way or another. And even if they don't, or they don't do it with a primary piece, like something has to give, right? I mean, you can't have three young players, you know, in a musical chair situation at third base, even if one's playing second base. Like, that's not where he should be playing. Even though he's been, I guess, decent there. They need to get Acuña regular playing time. They need to get Beatty regular playing time. They need to get Vientos regular playing time. And, you know, maybe one gets traded, but I've always thought that guy would be Vientos because he probably has the most value coming off of last year, even though it's been a disappointing year. You still know what he's capable of doing, and certainly in the last week or so, like, we've seen glimpses of that 2024 version of Vientos, which at which point you'd ask, well, if he's going to hit like this, they need him, they shouldn't trade him,
right?
You know, so
you get a little nervous,
right? I mean, he always seems to do better when he has a chip on his shoulder. You know, I talked about that yesterday, and you know, when there's he seems incentivized to perform because, well, now they want to. Now they're talking about trading me. I'm going to show them a thing or two. Oh, last year when they got JD Martinez, I'm going to send me to the minors. I'm going to show them a thing or two. Like, you know, it's that, you know, he's out there spitting nails on him. And I like it, you know, because obviously he's performing. And, you know, he's just kind of, you know, I almost felt like, you know, when he hit the Grand Slam yesterday, like he was going to run the bases and flip off the David Stearns in his box, you know, because but I like it. I want players to, you know, I want players to prove front offices and managers wrong. Like, you know, you love it. And because ultimately that benefits the team. And you like to see, you know, Cinderella stories too with players. And I think Vientos is one of those Cinderella stories, you know, certainly, you know, with last year. But I still think, like, he has, you know, if there's someone who's going to be traded, you know, he has the most upside. He has the most value. That power plays in any ballpark, you know, so.
Yeah.
And I think should the Mets trade him? I mean, I'm a little. He was so important to the team last year, and you know, you just don't want
to. It's hard to forget what he did for them.
Well, it's not even that. Like, I'm not sentimental. It's more of, okay, well, I mean, that's in there, and that can help the team.
Well, that's what I'm saying too. It's not even that. It's like he did that for the duration of the season that he played, but also in the playoffs and in the big pressure moments.
Right.
I mean, he hit a grand slam against the Dodgers in the NLCS.
Right.
He hit a game tying home run in the ninth inning in Philadelphia. Like, we saw it. It's hard to forget that.
Right.
So
and,
soon.
And those, like, are intangibles that you can't teach those intangibles. Like, even with, you know, now all he's playing with a chip on his shoulder again, it's like, that's not a coachable attribute. Right. So, you know, that's just who Mark Vientos is. You know, he has that, you know, FU attitude. I'm going to show you a thing or two. And, you know, I really hope it, I hope he stays. I hope he continues. He's difficult to put in the field given the options they have. But look, if he can be, you know, a designated hitter type for them, that's fine too right now. Like, they just need offense and they need to win. You know, those are the only things that matter. I mean, they need everything else, but you know, as long as we're talking about the offense, like, if he's a part, he could be a part of the solution now and not the problem he was before.
Yeah, for sure. Last caller, and then we're going to wrap it up here. Alexander, you're on with us.
Yeah, I'll wrap it up. Thank you for inviting me in. I'll wrap it up by saying, first of all, A-plus grades for Stearns. He's doing what he's doing, and he's done, is upgraded this team significantly by adding known dependable relievers. Yes. You can never have too much of that. You don't know you're going to get injured. You know, there's that and many other reasons, but you can never have too much pitching. And the Mets were hungry and thirsty at the in the bullpen, you know, for people that they can depend on. Absolutely. So really, really, Stearns is, you know, sustaining, continuing an excellent performance Stearns has. And one other thing, what did I want to say? If within the next less than 24 hours, in 20 hours, in less than 20 hours, the trade deadline is over, mm-hmm. right? 6 p.m. tomorrow.
That's right.
So that's 20 hours from now, basically. No, 22 hours, 20 hours from now. And in any event, if Stearns, the Mets, make any more significant moves before those short few hours, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be something that really is appealing to Stearns and the Mets. They're no fools, and they've proven it. They're patient, and they'll be patient forever if that's what it takes. But they're not going to give away anything that leaves them at a big disadvantage. Yeah, and they did the opposite.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and I think they're not going to make inconsequential moves. It doesn't, you know, with these moves they made for the bullpen, I mean, it's one thing that everyone should have confidence in is that they're not making moves on the margins like they have even last year where they made moves on the margins, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're in for something big, whatever that is. I don't think they know what their needs are. You know, they know one-dimensional players don't solve their problems. Like, they need a complete solution, you know, to the offense. And I think if they're going to do something, that's what it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be a small time move. You know, there's going to be some risk involved in it. Like, there's risk with these relievers, but there's no reason to stop now. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think Alexander brings up a great point too. And just like, you know, if the Mets aren't going to do something big at this point, like, they might just not do anything at all. And I think they're going to do something. So, I mean, I think that's going to be meaningful in some way. They're approaching this deadline differently than they did last year, which is our only, you know, example of Stearns with the Cohen budget. So clearly they're approaching this differently, and we're going to see. I'm excited for tomorrow. Today, honestly, it's like, these are the days that jack you up. I'm pissed that they lost the game, but I almost like forget it because we have all these moves, all the rumors, and I think a lot more to come. So thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight. Let's go, Mets, and let's see what happens tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this free preview of the Just Mets podcast. If you liked what you heard and want access to full weekly episodes and additional bonus content, you can become a supporter of Just Mets on patreon.com/justmets or on justmets.net.